Welcome to another edition of the Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Wednesday, October 18th, 2023. Of course, the website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other programs I participate in. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, a contact page, and many other useful and important links. I am on Twitter and Gab at Realist Report, and you can also find me on Telegram at t.me/TheRealistReport. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to and help edit The Barnes Review, a bi-monthly revisionist history magazine. Please do consider subscribing to these fine print publications if you do not already. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for all the details. All right, today I'm joined by Zach, the creator behind Logos Revealed and the Logos Academy video lecture series. All right, Zach, welcome to the program, sir. How are you today?
I'm wonderful, John. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, no problem, man. It's good to connect. I know you have an excellent Odyssey channel called Logos Revealed, which features your Logos Academy video lecture series, which are excellent. And you also have a lot of other interviews that you've done with figures in the nationalist movement in America and probably other places as well. I think most of them have been American guests. I know you had Andreas from the Nordic Resistance Movement. I listen to that show pretty regularly. He's a great guy. So you've interviewed a lot of different people in the nationalist scene, and you also do like live streams and stuff like that through your Odyssey channel. And I'll have a link over to that channel when I post this podcast for anybody out there listening that's not familiar with your work. I'd highly recommend you check it out, and especially the Logos Academy video lecture series, which, as I mentioned, are excellent. Obviously, anybody who's seen any of your videos knows that you are a very intelligent, well-read man. So to get started, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself, whatever you feel comfortable sharing, and also talk about how you got involved in the alternative media in, you know, setting up your Odyssey channel and starting to do live streams and interviews and things of that nature.
Okay. As you had stated, I go by Logos Revealed. That's my online tag for, I guess it's my online persona. My real name is Zach, which I'm very comfortable with people calling me that. I actually prefer that. But I just got into this scene, I'd say about a year ago, is when I guess I became active. Prior to that, I was very apolitical, I guess you could say. About 2 or 3 years ago, when COVID started to ramp up, I was very apolitical person, and all of the things that were going on kind of essentially forced me into the political field, like I think it did many. COVID was a very, very polarizing situation. People had to be one side or you're the enemy kind of a thing. And that got me questioning things and looking into maybe why things were the way they were. And I was becoming very distrusting of the media and the mainstream narrative of this safe and effective and even the word vaccine. All these things were clearly incorrect. So I started digging into some research, and I watched a couple documentaries, and I had somebody that was pretty close to me say something along the lines of, it's the Jews. And, you know, at the time, I had never met a Jew. I didn't know anything about Judaism or the Jewish people or anything like that. So I kind of gave them the, you know, the typical eye roll that most normies give you when you try to discuss these things. And I'm a logical person, and I can't let somebody just say something that doesn't make sense to me without me looking into it. But I'm also not an emotional guy, so I'm not going to just shut you down or try to, you know, throw you under the bus or think you're crazy for saying something that I might not know. So I thought to myself, well, who's the only person I really know that ever really talked about the Jews? And that person happened to be Adolf Hitler. And, you know, I kind of just jumped straight into it. I read Mein Kampf, and that obviously put me down the rabbit hole. And ever since then, I've been on, I guess you could say, like a journey of truth. And I started up a channel myself and decided I wanted to bring this information that I've been learning myself to a bigger audience of people, because I feel this information needs to get out there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so interesting. There's so many cases like this. I mean, I'm curious, you know, to hear a little bit more about like your wake up moment, because that is always interesting to hear other people, you know, what sort of led them down this path. It sounds like COVID obviously really was like a key role, played a key role in sort of getting you to question not only that whole narrative, but other narratives as well. And that's very interesting. There was a lot of people, I think, with this whole COVID scamdemic that really had a very similar experience, and everybody kind of takes different paths to get there and maybe gets, you know, sidetracked with certain issues or whatever. But overall, I think that really, the whole scamdemic situation really caused a lot of people to start questioning the media, to start questioning the public health, quote unquote, experts. Well, you know, and it's funny, now that you mentioned that, I'm just curious, like, what is your overall, like, analysis of the whole COVID situation?
In my perception, and I honestly stopped researching COVID as heavily once I found out, I guess I will say, the more important lies or the bigger lies, those being the historical ones, looking at 9/11 and the Holocaust and World War II and all these different things. They kind of strayed me away from caring much about the COVID narrative, because it's very modern. The way I see it, which is, it's hard to see it any other way, is this was a big Jewish scheme, much like most other historical events that we've been lied to about. Obviously, it was a very large money grab. It was a massive wealth transfer, right? All the mom and pop shops had to close down, while Walmart and Amazon and all these other big wig companies got to stay open. So it was in that sense a wealth transfer, and at the same time, I can't say exactly what that vaccine is or that shot is, but whatever it is, it's not what they're saying. It's certainly not a vaccine. It's not something that's safe and effective. It's certainly
no, not at all. Not something to be trusted. Yeah, and there's a million different theories about it, about what's in it, or, you know, what sort of side effects it's causing. Clearly, it's causing a lot of very negative side effects for a lot of people. Not everybody necessarily, but I've read some absolute horror stories. There was a website that I was following for really the past couple of years called Real Not Rare, and it was basically just like written Q&As that were conducted with basically volunteers that would come forward and like share their experience and why they took the vaccine, what happened after they took the vaccine, what sort of response they had received from the medical establishment, and, you know, what sort of protocols that they've, you know, attempted to take to sort of like remedy their situation if they could at all. And oh my gosh, there's just so many just horror stories, including a lot of people that have died as a direct result of taking the vaccine. And I've been very skeptical of vaccines for, you know, going back to 2011, 2012, when I kind of started researching that issue. I recently interviewed, I've done like a regular sort of interview series with an author named John Massaro, who wrote a book called Will Vaccines Be the End of Us? That is really like a one-stop shop on the vaccine issue, just thoroughly exposes the whole history of vaccination, how it's been just one big fraud from the very beginning, and it's caused nothing but harmful side effects, really. I mean, you know, you're lucky if it doesn't do anything to you. I mean, most people have had very negative, you know, side effects or repercussions from taking vaccines, and they certainly do not offer any sort of benefits. All they do is offer risks to you. I mean, that's ultimately the conclusion that I've come to. And that was very, very apparent with this whole COVID situation. I think more than anything, though, I think that one of the key factors that led to these globalist Jews to implement this whole COVID scamdemic was to steal the election from Trump. I think that was one of the key aspects of it all. I don't know if you agree with that or what your take is on that, but I think just the timing of it, you know, sort of going into 2020 leading up to the election. And then, of course, we had the whole BLM revolution that took place shortly after that. I mean, it was sort of one big American color revolution, in my view.
Yeah, I might I might deviate a little bit on the Trump analysis. You know, he seems to be deeply in their pocket, you know, seeing as he's consistently calling himself Israel's greatest ally. And he's on, I don't know if you know it or not, he's on a shekel in Israel. You know,
oh, wow. I didn't know that. I know I know they were naming, like, weren't they naming like settlements after him and stuff like that?
Yeah, they really love that man. And you know, his father was deep in with the Jewish people. And so essentially, the way I view it is anybody, I read a very good book that analyzed this extremely well. It's called The Controversy of Zion by Douglas Reed. Are you familiar with that book?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's like one of the original, I think that was published what, in like the 1920s, I think.
65.
Was it? Oh, okay. Geez, I'm sorry. I was thinking it was like way earlier than that. Well, Douglas Reed, he was a mainstream journalist over in England. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I don't know why I was thinking it was in the 1920s, but okay, so it was the 1960s.
Yeah, he was the foremost war correspondent for World War II, in England, and he actually wrote another book prior to that called Far and Wide, where he came to the United States of America, and because of hence the title. He actually traveled from the East Coast all the way to the West Coast and stopped in every state. And it's a crazy read because as he's doing this cross-country trip, there's this beautiful writing style where he's talking about the landscapes and, you know, the just the architecture and all these different things that he's passing and the people and things like that. But then he'll start to get into the politics and talk about, like, the ADL and their control over our nation. And it's just really interesting to read and see how well he had this stuff mapped out all the way back in 1960. And Far and Wide actually came out prior to that. So just to see him have all this mapped out. But then in The Controversy of Zion, what he essentially states is post-World War II, all American politicians, whether they are right or left, are just bidding for the Zionist favor. So they're essentially just kissing Zionist ass in order to receive that Israel lobby funding so that they can get a spot in politics, because that's the only way it goes down.
Yes, and that is very, very obviously the case.
Certainly so. So much so, I might mess up her name. I think it's Cynthia McKinley. Are you familiar with her?
Cynthia McKinney, yes.
McKinney,
yes. Yeah. She was a representative from Georgia. Yep.
Yep, and they wanted her to sign a pledge to Israel, and she denied, and then they essentially kind of bigwigged her out of her position. It's very obvious. You're either on their side or you're not, and if you're not, you don't get a spot. So, in regards to them, I guess, stealing the election from Donald Trump, I don't see the motive, because he's already deeply in their pocket like any other politician. He might do a little bit of things that they don't like as much, but, you know, we look, he still has a massive Jewish lobby behind him. A lot of his campaign funders were Jews. So they don't hate him, certainly. Not all of them, at least.
I was going to say, there's a pretty big segment that does hate him. But no, we don't got to get into a big debate about it. I think you're making some valid points for sure, and he definitely is totally in their pocket, whether he knows it or not, and sort of plays right into their traps like every single time. It's incredible. And I mean, he was one of the biggest promoters of the vaccine, and how, you know, he really like championed this as like one of the greatest accomplishments of his administration. But anyways, that's sort of like a whole other topic. I want to kind of get back to our conversation, and you had mentioned how, you know, your first, so like reading Mein Kampf, that was like really like your first, deep dive into the Jewish question, was reading that.
Yeah, it was,
you picked probably the best book to read, you know. And I remember, I mentioned this before we started recording, like I kind of like sort of woke up. I was already sort of waking up, but like what kind of woke me up to like the whole Jewish question was researching 9/11 and realizing that from start to finish, like every single aspect that you looked at with 9/11, like Jews were involved in like everything. They certainly benefited from it. The whole global war on terrorism was a pre-concocted like Jewish paradigm of foreign relations that they needed a new Pearl Harbor to, you know, sort of justify and implement, certainly in the United States. And that's a topic we'll get into as we proceed here. But that was sort of like my first real kind of like wake up call to the Jewish question, so to speak. I always kind of knew something was different or something was unique or sort of like there's something going on with the Jews. I mean, just based on some of the people I knew, like growing up in high school and in college and stuff. And I recognized that they clearly like were very well connected, very well educated, most of them, very, very wealthy, many of them, and just somehow seemed to like have all sorts of like benefits and advantages, and they were very like well connected and well networked. So that was something I kind of always recognized. But then like kind of researching 9/11, you start, you know, learning about the history of Israel and false flag attacks that they've done over the years, and just the reality of like Jewish power in this country. And I remember actually coming across a video making the case that Adolf Hitler himself was actually like a Zionist puppet and like may have been partially Jewish himself. And there's all these different theories. And I was like, what? And I couldn't even believe it. So I started like, and I was like, okay, well, I want to get to the bottom of this. And I remember getting Mein Kampf and reading it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this guy had so many important things to say about so many issues, not just the Jewish question. About virtually, you know, every societal problem, every political problem, party politics, history, race, you know, nationality, like all these sorts of issues. He had a very, very deep insight and sort of understanding of these issues and articulated it very, very well throughout Mein Kampf. So it wasn't really just like this anti-Jewish screed or something like that. It was a very very just deep analysis of all these various issues. So I'm curious, like, what are the key takeaways in Mein Kampf after reading it?
So for me, and I like what you said in regards to, because a lot of people get confused and they want to just paint this as, again, this anti-Jewish thing. And especially the mainstream, obviously people like you and myself understand that there was much more to Hitler as an individual. I saw him more as a philosopher than anything. So right around the time I read Mein Kampf, I was getting into ancient Greek philosophy, and I saw many parallels in his way of thought to their way of thought. And some of the big things, one of the actually the most base level things that stood out to me was his take on history. And he said, history isn't something that you're just supposed to remember names and dates. History is something that you're supposed to analyze the past so that you can either benefit from the mistakes that were made or avoid those mistakes again in the future. And that was something that really resonated with me because it screamed at me like, this is your society today. Well, they're not teaching you those things. They're teaching you this names and dates. And again, it kind of helps you to recognize that your government that's supposed to be for you and backing your people and protecting your people and also enlightening your people actually isn't doing any of those things. They're only protecting you as far as they can benefit from you. And that Mein Kampf really helped me to understand that. And drawing the parallels between the distrust of the quite literal Jewish power structure in Germany at the time that he was writing about and the power structure that we're experiencing, you know, pointing to this communist factor. I remember one of the things that stood out the absolute most when I was researching this COVID narrative that pretty much concealed it for me. And I was like, okay, there's no more questioning whether this is hocus pocus or whatever. I believe it's the NIAID or something like that. It's like a drug part of the NHS. The head of that, her name is Nora Volkov. She is the biological granddaughter of Leon Trotsky. And when I learned that, I was like, okay, all right. I no longer can chalk all of these mistakes up that the government is making to a coincidence. It's now very obvious we are under Jewish tyranny.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there are so many important lessons and important insights into the Jew. I mean, again, not only the Jewish question, but many other issues, but especially the Jewish question. I mean, that is obviously a major theme. And I think for me, one of the and I think he even says like how the like really like the big lie is like this idea that the Jews are like this like religious minority. Like amongst Germans, rather than like a separate foreign, like hostile, like ethnic racial group, you know. So like understanding the Jews as like a fundamentally like racial problem, that was like very, very important in my understanding. Because I absolutely think he's right. I mean, the Jews are not, they're not like Americans or you know white Europeans. They just have a different religion. They are fundamentally a totally different group of people, a different ethnic racial group. And I mean, I think there's even all sorts of DNA evidence that demonstrates that, not to mention their actions and the way they view themselves, both historically and contemporarily. I mean, to even call a Jew living in America an American Jew or something like that is I think fundamentally wrong. It's a Jew living in America, right? I mean, they're fundamentally, you know, defined by their Jewish identity. So that was something that was very, very powerful and very, very insightful and sort of like, I mean, it just made sense. And I think he makes a strong case. And again, I think there's all sorts of evidence to back that up, including DNA evidence. So that was really eye-opening to me. And then I remember this specifically, like vividly reading this part of the book. I think it's chapter, I'm not sure if it's chapter 12 or maybe it's chapter 10. It's like Nation and Race, I think is the name of the chapter. And he talks about like the different races of mankind and how like white Aryans are like the creators of civilization and like any form of advancement in scientific thought or philosophical thought or architecture or any like major advancement in sort of like understanding how the world works and sort of advancing civilization, whether it's art or literature or philosophy or politics or whatever, really is like driven fundamentally by the Aryan mind, like, you know, like the Aryan civilization. We really are the creators of civilization. And I had never heard anything put that way. You know, growing up, it's like it's just assumed and it's presented in movies and mainstream, you know, education and certainly by these like radical leftist activists that white people are like the oppressors of all these other races and we're only so wealthy and advanced because we've stolen the land from the Indians and taken advantage of blacks and slavery and all this other nonsense. Where he offers a much different perspective, a much different analysis of of like just civilization in general. And he also talks about how the fall of any great civilization is a direct result of race mixing and of massive movement, like massive migration and massive movements of foreigners into your country. And that's obviously something I think that has been proven pretty conclusively historically.
Absolutely. And they also something else that really appealed to me in there's a an archive. I actually have it pinned on my Gab account where they National Socialist Germany, they actually wrote a bunch of predictions for the United States of America and what would happen to us. And dude, I mean, it's spot on what's happening today. It's actually it's like they had a crystal ball. It's terrifying how accurate they were.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at your Gab channel now to see if I can see that. But I'm familiar with some of that material. I mean, have you seen like the propaganda posters depicting France, for example, like, you know, when they're, you know, like letting in all these like black migrants from like Africa even back then in like the 20s and 30s. I mean, yeah, they definitely had a lot of this stuff totally figured out and their predictions proved to be spot on. And there's so many just absolutely epic quotes from Mein Kampf. This one I thought of it just as we were doing the program, considering what's going on over in Israel right now. And I'm sure you've heard this quote. I'll just read it briefly. This is from Mein Kampf. Hitler is talking about like the idea of like a Jewish state and how the Zionists, like the Zionist like nationalist Zionist movement, really has like the Western world fooled because it's not gonna be this like aspirational state for the Jewish people. It's going to be an international like headquarters for their world swindle, I think is how he described it. And that's absolutely spot on. I'll just read this briefly. He says, while the Zionists try to make the rest of the world believe that the national consciousness of the Jew finds its satisfaction in the creation of a Palestinian state, the Jews again slyly dupe the dumb goyim. It doesn't even enter their heads to build up a Jewish state in Palestine for the purpose of living there. All they want is a central organization for their international world swindle, endowed with its own sovereign rights and removed from the intervention of other states, a haven for convicted scoundrels, and a university for budding crooks. And, I mean, if that doesn't describe Israel to a T, I don't know what does. I mean, he absolutely nailed that. And that's exactly what we're seeing playing out in the Middle East right now. It's what we've seen play out in the Middle East since the founding of this terrorist, criminal, rogue state in the Middle East known as Israel.
Yeah, today it's becoming more obvious every year, but currently this situation going on with Palestine right now is it's very obvious these people are not they don't have a moral compass. I don't know if you've seen just in the last 2 weeks, these people on television, I think it was Ben Shapiro and Mark Levin, openly essentially calling for nuking the world.
Yeah. Oh, I've seen it. Yeah.
It's absurd. Basically calling for the Samson option, which for those that are unfamiliar is Samson. It's referring to the Bible. Samson was a guy who tore down the temple to kill him. In order to kill everybody around him, including himself, kind of the thought process: if I'm going down, you're going down with me. So Israel has a Samson option policy that states that if Israel is ever going to be overrun by an opponent, and the opponent today would be Palestine, they will use the Samson option, which will nuke every country on the planet, including themselves.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. There's been a lot of, I mean, even like Israeli, like military people that have come out and sort of revealed this strategy. And these people are literally like psychopathic, like monsters, at least a lot of them, you know, in the way they think, the some of the things that they say. I don't know. Did you catch that interview? I think it was with The Telegraph, which is like a newspaper a news outlet in the UK, and one of their presenters was interviewing like this Israeli government official, and was asking him about Palestinian civilians, and this guy was just like, you know, there's no such thing. These people are all terrorists. He called them Nazis. I mean, again, invoking National Socialism and the alleged Holocaust. And just like they're so like disconnected from reality, so delusional, so hysterical, and just bloodthirsty monsters. And we see that not only in Israel, but also pretty much all the major politicians in America as well. They're just as bad as the Zionist, you know, bloodthirsty maniacs over in Israel. I mean, Lindsey Graham was like calling for like bombing Iran. Iran had nothing to do with this.
Yep. Well, and again, a lot of these people. There's a very tough dynamic that we have to make sure we pay attention to here. And that's that a lot of these people. So, let's use blacks in America, for instance, right? Today, they're being pounded with this consistent propaganda of police brutality and white supremacy. So they have a natural fear about them when they get pulled over by a police officer, where they feel like they're going to get murdered or something ridiculous. When meanwhile, if they would just like hand over their license like everybody else and just, okay, yes, I was speeding a little bit, or I had a taillight out. If they would just do that, they would be fine. There is no like systematic racism where cops are just hunting down blacks, trying to pull them over and murder them. But because of that, it's like fear porn, that constant propaganda, blacks have this affinity to being afraid of police. Well, when you really think about the Jewish people, their ideology, it's all of it is based around being expelled from countries and committing genocides. And in their eyes, they literally call their genocides self-defense. We look at the Book of Esther, which is them killing 75,000 Persians. On Wikipedia, it openly says they killed 75,000 Persians in self-defense. That's how these people think. So if you're taught as a Jew from a baby all the way up to adulthood that these big bad goy, all they want to do is get the first chance that they can to screw you over or kill you all, it's like trained into your mind to want to scam those people and get a swindle over on them. So it's a very tough dynamic we're working in, but they really do. They're like trained to hate us from childhood.
Yeah, they are. I mean, that's fundamentally like one of the most important aspects of Jewish identity is, well, one, I think certainly in a modern context, it's this idea of the Holocaust, this idea of 6 million Jews being systematically murdered by the Germans during World War II, not only by the Germans, but by other Europeans who were allied with Germany. I mean, you know, we see like how they bully Ukraine and Hungary and some of these other like Eastern European countries that were more or less allied with Germany or worked with the Germans during World War II. This is like fundamentally what shapes their identity as a Jew, but just as a person, like as they exist in this world. And I mean, there's even public opinion polls that demonstrate this very conclusively. And it doesn't matter if you're a Jew living in America or if you're a Jew in Israel or in England or anywhere in Europe or really anywhere in the world. This is like the most important aspect of what it means to be a Jew. It's not going to synagogue. It's not reading the Torah or the Talmud. It's all about persecution epitomized by this fake Holocaust story, this fake Holocaust narrative. But like from a broader historical perspective, this is absolutely fundamental to their identity. It's this history of persecution, and they describe it as irrational persecution, as, you know, just blind bigotry and persecution and oppression of Jewish people who never did anything wrong. It's just these evil white Christians that want to persecute them for no reason, because they're successful or because they're different or whatever the case is. That, you know, the Jews have never done anything wrong to justify this sort of treatment. And if you look at it historically, I mean, these expulsions, I'm not even convinced many of them were like super violent to begin with. I mean, it was basically a political decree, just like what Hitler did, and you know, when he came to power in Germany, is, look, you guys are a foreign group of people. You're not going to have rights in our country. You're not going to run the media. You're not going to run the economy. You're not going to, you know, have any position of power in the government. You are basically not welcome here, and you're encouraged to leave. We'll help you leave. I mean, that was a big part of what the Germans were doing. They were literally like facilitating the emigration of these people, even to Palestine itself at the time, which most people wouldn't even know about. But yeah, I mean, their identity is just fundamentally tied up in this history of this idea, this narrative of like blind persecution and hatred of Jews, when in reality, Europeans and other peoples for that matter have had a lot of very legitimate gripes and beefs and criticism of Jews due to their criminal behavior and their criminal behavior, their treacherous behavior, their exploitative and manipulative behavior. I mean, even like these stories, and this is a topic that I still am sort of learning about, but like these allegations of like blood libel and how Jews were like kidnapping Christian children and draining their blood and using them in, you know, these like bizarre like satanic sacrifices and stuff like that. There's actually quite a bit of legitimate evidence showing that this in fact did happen historically. In fact, the Barnes Review History magazine that I write for and help edit has a whole series of books on Jewish ritual murder that have recently come out, maybe over the course of the past year. I mean, a lot of the books are reprints from other, you know, the, you know, previously published books from Ukraine, for example, or Russia or England or, you know, many other parts of Europe. And there's a lot of evidence to show that, yeah, this was a real thing that did happen. And, you know, there's even been like Jewish rabbis that have written books about this subject. One in particular I'm thinking of is a rabbi named, I think it was Ariel Toaff. He was like a rabbi in Italy that wrote a book about Jewish ritual murder. So even this it turns out, I mean, you know, most people would think it's this crazy conspiracy theory, but actually, you start looking into this and start, consulting some of these older historical books, and there is, in fact, a lot of evidence to show that this was indeed going on. Maybe it wasn't on a widespread scale, but there were examples of this happening. And this is something that is, I mean, one of the most evil things you can think of, kidnapping a little kid and draining it, killing it and draining their blood. I mean, this is, I don't know what else to say besides from this is like straight from the mind of Satan or the devil or whatever. You know, this is just outrageous.
And I got to say, I believe it to be 100% true. If you look back, even prior to Christian civilization, they did this same thing. And it became more so like identified with Jews targeting Christians in a lot of literature when they talk about blood libel, especially in like the medieval time period. They say it's like specifically Jews targeting Christians, but actually they just do it to everybody. If you look back in ancient Greece, there was a man named Apion, a Greek philosopher, who wrote an article titled Against the Jews, where he accuses them of blood libel. And even prior to that, all the way in ancient Egypt, there was an Egyptian priest named Mentho. He wrote the same thing. Jews coming in and blood libel, cutting up children and draining their blood. And to further this psychotic behavior, if in case people don't believe it's possible, something that is provable and is 100% true is, again, we talked about the Book of Esther and their slaughtering of 75,000 Persians. They celebrate this today still, every year. It's called Purim. That's,
I was going to say, that's the Purim festival, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what they eat on Purim?
Tell me. I'm not even sure.
They eat a cookie that's called Hamantash, which is Hebrew for Haman's ears. And it looks like a guy's ears with meat inside. They eat a cookie that represents the man's ears that they killed, the big bad anti-Semite Haman.
Right. Yeah. I mean, these people, generally speaking, like collectively, are very different from white Christians. And that's pretty obvious if you just take even, a cursory glance at their history and just some of their practices and just some of the things that they say and do. I mean, it's really, really just outrageous, frankly. Well, I wanted to actually kind of shift gears a little bit. I mean, we could. I'm sure we'll get into more of these topics as we proceed here. But I want to talk about the Logos Academy video lecture series that you do. I think you've done a total of, what is it, 6 total episodes since you started it?
Yes, 6 so far.
Yeah, and they're very good. I'm curious, I mean, they're obviously very informative. You're kind of sitting there presenting in front of a whiteboard and making points and like writing things out, sort of like a lecture, like a university style lecture. And I'm wondering, how did you get the idea to start this series?
Actually, it was really simple. So, I thought about we're trying to educate people, right? That's the whole idea with doing a live stream or a podcast or writing articles or all these different things. All we're trying to do is educate people, right? Well, our school system is, they're not educating people with any kind of higher value. So I decided I'm just going to do what the school system isn't doing. And I'm going to get myself a whiteboard and I'm going to stand in front of it and I'm going to educate people the way that they should be educated. A lot of the topics I discuss are specifically revisionist history, I will say. Where I go into historical events that are very clearly lied about, or there's a lot of discrepancies and things that people don't know the real facts of. And if they knew those facts, their perception would be much different. So I go mostly into that, but I've also been trying to branch out into cultural history as well, to reawaken a sense of pride in specifically our Aryan culture. And again, that collective of people that have always created great civilizations. I think it's important that we return to that and have pride in that, rather than this fear propaganda that we have today, where they're trying to convince us that we're all psychotic murderers and we're evil and all this nonsense.
Right. Yeah. No. Well, you do a great job with it. It's very, very impressive, honestly. And I'm not going to lie, I haven't seen all of them, but the ones that I have seen have been very well done, and the points that you make are awesome. And it's just a very smooth presentation. You're obviously very well prepared. You got your facts down, and you sort of outline things very well with the whiteboard, and it's really quite an education. And two of the videos that I've seen just in the past week or so are dealing with the two topics that really have been kind of my bread and butter type issues that I've been so focused on really since I started blogging and you know, writing online and doing podcasts. And that's, of course, 9/11. I mentioned 9/11 was like kind of my big wake-up call. I came across a 9/11 truth group when I moved to San Diego and was just absolutely blown away. I mean, I had never even really entertained like an alternative idea or narrative about 9/11. I never really thought about it. I was very much against all the wars that 9/11 was based on, but I never really thought about 9/11 itself until I went to a 9/11 truth group, and I was just so blown away. It was like so obvious that the official conspiracy theory, and that is what it is, the official story itself is a conspiracy theory, that official conspiracy theory was just frankly insulting. It was so ridiculous, like once you stopped and, you know, actually thought about it. So, you know, I wanted to get to the bottom of it. I remember coming across like Christopher Bolin, for example, and Victor Thorne, Michael Collins Piper. These are all three of those individuals all used to write for American Free Press, the newspaper that I currently write for and have been writing for over 10 years now. But they were on this from the very beginning. I mean, Chris Bolin was bringing up all these inconvenient facts about Israeli involvement literally from like day one. So these guys were on it from the very, very beginning. And there's been a lot of other researchers that have taken a, you know, a good look at 9/11 and connected all the dots. Brandon Martinez, for example, he was on it from the very beginning as well. I remember coming across his work back in the day when I was, you know, first kind of looking into this stuff. There's a great documentary called 9/11 Missing Links that ties this all together very well as well. So I'm sure you're probably familiar with a lot of this work anyways. Yeah, but your video presentation was excellent. I think it's only about 30 or 40 minutes. It's not super long, and you make a lot of really good points. You connect a lot of the dots, and yeah, maybe, I don't know, can you just like tell us a little bit about the video and maybe how you went about compiling the information? What are the most important facts people need to know about 9/11 from your perspective?
Yeah, so for starters, how I format the video, as you said, it was about 30 or 40 minutes. So I try to keep them. I recognize the attention span today is not what it once was in the world. So I try to keep the videos as reasonable length as possible. So I go for, you know, that 30 to 40 minute range, and I just basically I watch documentaries and read a couple books about the subject, and then I'll take all the points that I find to be the most interesting or the most valuable for the truth, and I compile those all together in like a notepad. As you can see, like when I'm doing the video, I have a notebook with me always, and that's my that's like my truth notes, where they have all those facts conglomerated into there. And again, just to get this information across, you just have to remain as calm as possible and try not to give people the sense that you are like this quote unquote radical that the media has smeared you as already. So I think when we look at 9/11, the most important things are obviously Larry Silverstein and his massive swindle. So if you want to see like a Jewish scam or a Jewish connection or Jews being connected somehow scamming people in a historical event, one of the keys to look at is they always are making a financial profit from said scam. So we can see with 9/11, that financial profit was this terrorism insurance that he just so happened to take out like 2 weeks or so before the event happened. You know, massive coincidence, right?
You know what? It's like, I know, it's like so insulting, like how this guy would have the nerve to do this. And like, if you question it or, you know, start connecting the dots, like you're some irrational anti-Semite or something. I mean, give me a break.
Yep. And again, you know, the you just have to look at how many Jews are connected every single time. And for 9/11 after he took out this billions of dollars in terrorism insurance and made that after he took out the terrorism insurance, he went to court to win for the insurance against the insurance company for like $4 billion because he won for both towers, which is even more ridiculous.
Didn't he argue it was like two separate incidents?
Yeah,
so he doubled the money towers. Or something. Yeah, it was like some scam like that.
Well, his lawyer in court was Mike Lipton, who is another Jew that he went to a Jewish school with in college. They were like in a New York school together, and he didn't call him up if you're gonna get a lawyer, right, a normal person, you have to like look one up in the paper or look one up online and call around and try to find a good lawyer, right? I mean, he literally called this guy on his personal cell phone. He said it in an interview. It was just like calling up his buddy, like, hey buddy, you know, I'm trying to make $4 billion, can you hook me up? And Mike Lipton came and helped him in court, and obviously they won the case and swindle continued.
Yeah. Well, and you know what, I'm almost positive you actually do address this in the video, but even the way the World Trade Center complex itself was like privatized and sold to Larry Silverstein was like a massive like Jewish conspiracy, basically. Who was it? Ronald Lauder was involved in it, I think. I think wasn't he on the port of like New York, New Jersey, like on the board? And there was it was basically like all Jews involved in it, like that sort of worked this privatization scheme to allow the entire complex to be sold to a private, you know, investor or whatever. And that was, of course, Larry Silverstein.
Yeah, I'm not crazy familiar on the details with the actual purchase of the towers and how he obtained them. More of my focus was specifically on what he did with the towers that he had rights to. I actually did not know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a major aspect of like Christopher Bolin's research. I know. He was exposing this how like the. The way the towers themselves were acquired by Larry Silverstein was basically like this Jewish like conspiracy, essentially. I mean, like I said, it was I'm pretty sure it was I could probably look it up really quick, but I know a guy named Frank Lowy was involved. Let me see if I can find it real quick. But anyways, I mean, it's just another indication of Jewish involvement in this and like sort of setting this up for somebody like Larry Silverstein to come and acquire it and then, of course, make a ton of money off of it.
Yeah, which again is it's crazy how cohesive these people are in every situation, whether it be like a terrorist event like this, whether it just be a big financial swindle. They're always backing each other. They're always helping each other out, so long as the Goyim gets scammed.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Anyways, yeah, and I mean, that's just one example. I mean, I always pointed out, I mean, so like when I first kind of got involved in the 9/11 truth movement, I quickly like discovered this whole Israeli angle to it. Because I mean, like back then, like everybody was talking about like Bush being involved and Cheney being involved and like the Saudis being involved. And it was everybody but the Jews, everybody but Israel. And one of the first things that really shocked me was the fact that like the only people actually arrested by our own law enforcement officials in fact, I think they were from, was it the East Rutherford Police Department in New Jersey, right across the river from New York City. They arrested some of these Mossad agents that were directly involved in what was going on in New York. And yet this wasn't even like ever mentioned. And it's like, no. Guys, don't you think they have something to do with this? Like, isn't this kind of a red flag? Like, nobody wanted to talk about it. And I was like, man, this to me is more like probably like the simplest thing to say to people is, look, the only people that were actually arrested that day, directly involved and seemed to have foreknowledge, were acting very mysterious, were immediately saying, oh, look, you know, we're not your problem. The Palestinians are your problem. The Muslims are your problem. They're the ones that did this terrorist act. Meanwhile, these guys are like literal Mossad and like Israeli intelligence and, like military operatives. So that was a huge red flag to me. And there were other reports that came out. There was a guy, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the guy named Gerald Shea. He wrote this. He was like this lawyer. He wrote this huge memorandum to the 9/11 commission. When they were like doing their official, quote unquote, official investigation into 9/11, which basically just codified the official conspiracy theory explaining 9/11, which is ludicrous. It's like the same thing as like the Warren Report for like the JFK assassination. But anyways, this guy was a lawyer, and he submitted this very detailed report to the 9/11 commission, outlining like this massive Israeli spy network that was operating all, well, really all across the United States. They were involved in drug smuggling, drug running, and all sorts of very mysterious things, including even casing some of these quote unquote Arab terrorists, like the hijackers, which I don't even buy the whole hijacker thing. But anyways, they were up to their eyeballs in what was going on in 9/11 is my point. And this guy raised all sorts of very credible credible information, about this. I mean, he was even providing like FBI documents, FBI reports. Like the federal government knew this was going on, at least certain segments of it. And yet nothing was done. These guys were like let off the hook, went back to Israel, where I'm sure you've seen that video where they're interviewed on Israeli television, where they were like admitting, yeah, we were there to document the event. Like, of course we had foreknowledge. We were there to document everything. So, anyways, I mean, there was just so much evidence linking Israel to what happened on 9/11. Not to mention the fact that the entire Bush administration, much like the Biden administration and the Trump administration and the Obama administration, was just like totally controlled by Jews, certainly at the Pentagon, certainly at the State Department. Michael Chertoff himself, who later became the director of Homeland Security when that agency was created in the aftermath of 9/11, he was like, what was he? He was in the Justice Department during like when 9/11 happened, and he was like one of the key officials that allowed these Israelis to be deported back to Israel without even facing any real scrutiny, any real investigation. It's like these are the prime suspects in what just happened, and you let them back to, let them go back to Israel. It's like totally outrageous, and yet most people wouldn't even know this.
Yep, and I think that's the main key is part of this Jewish conspiracy is to control the media so that you control the narratives that the public gets to see, and that's really their biggest part of this is that cover up, that ability to just kind of push it underneath the rug, and it's what they constantly do. So, mainstream, again, most people know that 9/11 was completely bullshit. It wasn't Muslims and that hijacked the planes. But they have this silly like mainstream narrative of, you just hear people joking around like jet fuel doesn't melt steel beams, which it's a valid point, but like it doesn't point to like, okay, so that means that there's a culprit then. That means that if this wasn't just jets that crashed into the tower, then what was it, right? And then, you get the narrative of like Bush did 9/11. You always hear people saying that. And then you have to look, okay, well, what would his motive be to do that? Right? Like, does Bush benefit from us going to war in Iraq? Does Bush benefit? Like, he only benefits as much as the Jews allow him to benefit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, and I mean, for years, people were saying how, like, Halliburton and, like, the big oil companies were behind, like, the war in Iraq when none of them benefited even remotely from that war. It was basically all designed to advance Israel's geopolitical interests in the region using the American military. And I mean, again, they like would openly, you can even read like op-eds. I remember there's an op-ed in Haaretz years ago, like shortly after the Iraq War started, like just admitting that the Iraq War was a direct result of like the almost exclusively Jewish neocons in the pundit class in DC, in the Bush administration itself, at all these like foreign policy think tanks. They were the ones, promoting this policy, promoting this fake quote unquote evidence, like the whole weapons of mass destruction nonsense. I mean, they were the ones fabricating all this stuff and promoting it in the media to justify this war. And here they are like openly like bragging about it in Haaretz newspaper. And again, most people wouldn't even know this. And you get these like leftists who are absolutely petrified of even coming close to addressing the Jewish question. They want to blame big corporations, big oil, Cheney, Bush, you know, anybody but the real culprits that benefited and ultimately planned all this. And again, there's all sorts of evidence to demonstrate that. I mean, the whole concept of a global war on terrorism was literally concocted in Israel by Benjamin Netanyahu and other, you know, Zionist military strategists and the people who would later go on to become the neocons and you know, that basically took over U.S. foreign policy in the 90s and 2000s. And again, this is all very well documented. I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu literally wrote a book called, what is the name of his book? It was, I'll find it right now. I can't remember the exact name of it. It was basically like outlining the whole global war on terrorism. That, you know, and this was published years ago, well before 9/11, well before, you know, this whole paradigm of U.S. foreign policy was institutionalized in America.
Yeah, I think there's a quote about that book that he literally says something in regards to the towers being attacked.
Sorry, it's called, yeah, here it is right here, Fighting Terrorism, How Democracies Can Defeat Domestic and International Terrorists. And I think this one was published, one of them was published like years ago, like in like the 70s or 80s. And then like, they like came out with a newer one like shortly after 9/11. But anyways, this whole idea, this whole concept of a global war on terrorism where like the West, the Western democracies and Russia, even Russia, they were talking about like how Russia needed to like unite with the West to launch this global campaign to eliminate radical Islamic terrorists, which if you look into that whole, you know, subject, many of these terrorist groups themselves were fronts or were somehow manipulated or even created by Western intelligence and by the Mossad, you know? So it's like, they were like literally creating a lot of these groups and using them in various ways to sort of kickstart and justify this whole idea of a global war on terrorism. And of course, everybody knows about the PNAC document, which you talk about in the video, where they literally talk about the need for a new Pearl Harbor. How much more obvious does it have to be?
And the PNAC thing is especially interesting. I think it was Bill Kristol was one of the heads of that.
Yeah, one of the leading Jewish pundits promoting all these wars, yeah.
Yep, and they were caught openly lying about I think it was in Iraq, them having like an airfield where they were training people to do terrorist attacks with airplanes, like big Boeings.
Yeah, they were even trying to blame Iraq for 9/11. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
They were just lying about literally everything. It was like so incredible. And I mean, we see the same thing playing out today with the situation in Israel and with Ukraine and with, you know, pretty much any other war we've been involved with. It's just like total gaslighting. That's like the exact tactic that these people use. They will tell you literally the opposite of reality. And that certainly applies to the whole Holocaust story. And that was actually the second Logos Academy video that you did. It's called Holocaust Analysis. And that was just absolutely outstanding. And I mean, I've argued for a long time that the official narrative of World War II, you know, like this hysterical demonization of Hitler and the National Socialists and of, you know, quote unquote Nazi Germany. But probably even more powerfully is this fake story about the Jewish Holocaust. These are like the central pillars of the way like the vast majority of people in America and in the West more generally understand the world, understand like contemporary history. And it's yep. fundamentally like almost literally the opposite of what actually happened. It is fundamentally presented from a Jewish perspective to advance this like globalist Jewish system. I mean, think about it, like everything is tied into this fake story. You know, like if you're pro-white, like you want to commit a Holocaust against 6 million Jews. I mean, literally everything goes back to this story. And I think that's kind of something that you were sort of articulating in this video, but and maybe you could kind of expand on it.
Certainly. I mean, allowing this narrative to continue, and again, let's just presume that this narrative was true. There, even if it was true, and this Holocaust did happen, there was a systematic genocide of 6 million Jews. Well, that doesn't mean that we can't have conversations about it or try to figure out. You can't be pro-white without getting shut down because of said Holocaust. You know, it's not, even if it was true, it wouldn't become over-encroaching authority over everything else. And part of what I was trying to get across in this video was that the Holocaust has so many discrepancies. It's not just one or just two or and I tried to go from this perspective of explaining you know, a Jewish perspective of it, like David Cole, for example, who went over and proved that these gas chamber story wasn't exactly correct, and because it shows you, like, okay, well, why would he lie, right? Like, because that's the take that a lot of people have when someone like you or myself decides to talk about this and spread the truth. It's, oh, well, we have some kind of ulterior motive just because we just hate Jews, you know? So that's why I tried to pull from Jewish sources so that they can see, like, if I had an ulterior motive and I just hated Jews, I wouldn't be pulling a Jewish source. You know?
Right, right. Well, I think the way you even started off the video was very, very, like a good strategy, especially for somebody that's like brand new to this topic. I mean, why? And I think I'm pretty sure at the very beginning of the video you talk about like how it's literally illegal to even question this event in like so many countries around the world, especially in Europe, where like you will be thrown in jail if you dispute or question even like a minor detail of the official story. And that, I mean, that itself should reveal everything you need to know about this, about like, okay, how legitimate can this narrative be if you can't even question it, or you can't even have a nuanced conversation about the topic?
Right. And additionally, even though in places like the United States, it's not illegal to question it, it's socially unacceptable.
So right, right.
You can't just go
publicly. Go publicly try to deny the Holocaust and see what happens to you.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like you can just go talk about this and everybody's like, oh, you know that. Oh, okay, those facts kind of make a little bit of sense.
Oh,
well,
wow.
That.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Maybe I should think more about this. No, you're like,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
No, no. You're a bigot. You just hate Jews, and like, I'm just so tired of hearing this absurd narrative from everybody. You come across with any kind of factual information and all of a sudden you just have to be a Jew hater.
Right. Yeah. That's automatically the sort of knee jerk reaction. And I think that knee jerk reaction is a direct result of all this like traumatizing emotional propaganda that we get related to the Holocaust.
Certainly.
I mean, you know, you talk to like an average person, they don't know the first thing about the Holocaust. They couldn't tell you. I mean, they might be able to tell you 6 million Jews or something, but they wouldn't know any of the details. They wouldn't know any of the camps. They wouldn't know any of, like, the basics of, like, what is actually claimed. I mean, the official narrative is, like, truly absurd, and yet they wouldn't even know, like, the first thing about it. What they do know is what they've seen in these, like, Hollywood movies where Jews are being shot. Like, you know, Schindler's List, for example. There's some, like, horrific, traumatizing, even pornographic scenes in a lot of these movies. It's like very, very sophisticated, like almost like MK Ultra type programming. You know what I mean? Like, okay. I think they use these tactics specifically to like implant this like horror story in the minds of the masses, which leads inevitably to like these knee jerk reactions and just like a fundamental inability to have an honest conversation about the topic.
Absolutely. And they know that's why they've set it up the way they have.
Yeah. I mean, that's clearly the case. I mean, these people are experts in propaganda and like traumatizing. I mean, the guy, Edward Bernays, the Jew that wrote the book Propaganda. I mean, like, they've been studying this literally like scientifically for like generations now. And they have this stuff down to a science, the way they can use the media, the way they can, you know, use these horrific, traumatizing images and like these emotional narratives and testimony. I mean, another thing is like they let these Holocaust survivors come and like, you know, indoctrinate kids at school. Like, well, they'll sit down. And you know what? I even actually worked at a school where this happened, and it was such a sight to behold. Like, I was like blown away. This woman comes in and she has a memoir and she sits down, and they do this in like English class. It's not even a history class. It's an English class, where they like spend like a month talking about the Holocaust and watching all these Hollywood movies, The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, and I can't even remember some of the other ones. There, I mean, there's a million different Holocaust movies, but they would like literally like watch a Holocaust movie like once a week, and then to kind of like conclude the whole like program or whatever, they'd have this speaker come in, and she would sell her book. She would show up and like traumatize these kids with these horror stories about what allegedly happened to her and her family, and then she would sell her book for like $20, and some of these kids would buy it. I'm just like the level of like brazen, like shameless, like exploitative behavior is like shocking. I mean, I couldn't even believe it.
I actually saw a film in Germany. They made children, like school age children, for a field trip, go to a Jewish grave site, well, quote unquote grave site, if it's even what it is, for Holocaust people that died in the Holocaust, and they made these kids get down on their hands and knees with a bucket of soap and water and scrub clean all of the tombstones.
Unbelievable.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, this is like super depressing. I mean, this is just depressing to, I mean, it's just crazy. Like this would be acceptable, and yet here we are. And it's really bad in Germany considering all the brainwashing they experienced after the war. You know, I mean, they systematically purged like every single National Socialist political figure, all the literature. They totally rewrote the history books. I mean, you know, this whole like war guilt was foisted upon them, and really, it's not only like directed against the Germans; it's really against the whole white Western world. I mean, you see articles coming out in these pronouncements by Jewish leaders talking about how the Holocaust was really the fault of Western civilization itself. I mean, I remember writing an article years ago. I mentioned Ron Lauder earlier; he's the guy behind the World Jewish Congress. He was, you know, every anniversary of the Holocaust, you know, they have like these different events throughout the year, one in January, one later on in the year, and you know, they'll get up and give these big speeches. And yeah, he like literally condemned the entire Western world for being complicit in the Holocaust. So it's like all white people's fault for the Holocaust, which isn't even true anyways.
You can't
But
win, boy. You can't win.
I know it's like so out it's like so outrageous, dude. It's like infuriating.
And are you familiar with Io Kamathi?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I have his book. I
So
have his book actually.
do I. I actually just read it recently. He said something that I've actually never heard a white nationalist say, and it really, really resonated with me. But he said, you know, all these Jews, right, that complain about the Holocaust and woe is me, right? Have you ever heard one say, "Thank you, America, for saving us"? Thank you. You ever
Exactly,
hear not even
exactly.
one time? You ever hear somebody say? So if it really was true. And this really happened to them, or if they actually had any respect for us, which they don't, and it's very obvious, they would have at least said thank you. You've never heard a thank you. You've heard them remembering it and how awful it was, but you never hear them say thank you for to us for saving them.
Well, and not only that, but how about a thank you for, you know, giving, I don't know how many acres it is of prime real estate right in the nation's capital for the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. Not to mention all the money that goes to fund that and all these other Holocaust memorials across the country. The money that goes to the ADL, the money that goes to Israel. I mean, what is it like? I've seen different estimates. I mean, it's like literally millions of dollars a day that we
Which,
get.
by the way, in DC, the Holocaust Museum is one of the only ones that is paid admission.
You know what? I went there actually in 2015 and it was free to get in. And maybe
Was
they,
it?
yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
When I was younger, I went on a field trip there, and it was paid admission.
Wow, really?
I don't
Okay,
know. I
maybe.
guess maybe that changed. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was free. I'm almost positive. Gosh, and I wrote I'll see if I can. I know I have it on my website somewhere. I wrote like a review of it. And wouldn't you know, I go in there. And I was very, you know, I wasn't like, you know, causing a scene or anything. I was genuinely curious just to see it. And I like literally the first thing that happens when I walk in there's a table set up and there's this guy in a suit, this old Jewish guy in a suit. And he's got a sign like, come talk to a Holocaust survivor, hear about our experience. You had to donate to this asshole to talk to him. Like I'm not even exaggerating. Like it was literally like you had to pay to talk to this guy and have him like tell you his horror story about his family's experience in the Holocaust. I'll send you a link. I have it on my website.
Okay. I'm not surprised by that at all, to be honest.
No, I mean, of course, like, what else would you expect? I mean, a Jew, like, begging for money to have him tell you about his family's experience in the Holocaust. I mean, that's about as that's a typical Jewish behavior, I guess.
Yeah.
It was really outrageous. I was like, wow, these people just have no shame, no just the brazenness is just something to behold.
Well, and this is why they push this anti-stereotype narrative. It's don't stereotype people. That's wrong. That's hateful. That's ignorant, right? When the reason they don't want you to stereotype people is because if you stereotype people and you look at the patterns that these people do, everybody under the sun would look at Jews the same exact way because they all act that way. And at least 95%. So they push this narrative of don't stereotype because it's bad and hurtful and hateful. When meanwhile, it's always against minority groups. If you notice all these like propaganda pieces, these narratives that get pushed, they're always specifically pushed at the white man for what he does wrong.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, and a lot of those like anti-white narratives aren't even true themselves, or they're like majorly exaggerated. I mean, you think about like any aspect of like Western history, the founding of America, the history of slavery in America, the history of like colonialism more generally. It is all fundamentally presented from a totally biased anti-white perspective. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And there was a lot of Jewish involvement with both slavery in this country, with the KKK in this country, with the Revolutionary War. I mean, these people fund every conflict you can possibly imagine. They're on both sides, and they love to be on both sides because then when one side wins over the other, and the side that is bad is getting cast out by the people who have now won, and they point to the Jews for funding it, the Jew goes, oh, well, we funded this side too. It's not all of us. We're not all bad. You know, there's some good ones. You know, meanwhile, they're just profiting either way. Either way, they benefit the most from any kind of a physical conflict in the world every time.
Right. Absolutely.
When was the last war that the technical winner wasn't quite literally international Jewry?
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. I mean, they seem to be not only behind, but to benefit from all of these major wars. And we see that play out historically and even with what's going on today. Well, you know, one thing also that you brought up in your Holocaust analysis video that I thought was very good was not only talking about how it's like literally illegal to even question any aspect of this narrative in certain countries, that should be a huge red flag to any American, you know, who is told that, you know, we can say and question whatever we want. I mean, this is a free country. So just that fact alone should at least get you, you know, wondering like, what is up with this story? Why can't we even have an adult conversation about it? And then number two, you talk about the history of like the 6 million figure, which, are you familiar with the book by Dodd Hedesheimer, The First Holocaust?
I am not familiar with that book, no.
A lot of the material that you talked about in that section of the video, a lot of it is documented very, very well in this book. It's called The First Holocaust, Jewish Fundraising Campaigns with Holocaust Claims During and After World War I. They were making these claims even before World War II. And you talk about like the Chicago Tribune article, where 6 million Jews were going to be, you know, massacred in I think it was in the Russia, or no, I guess it would have been the Soviet Union. And there were very similar claims being made about the Jew, you know, 6 million Jews getting murdered in Hungary and in other parts of Eastern Europe. And then of course we saw these exact same claims during World War II, all of which were based on rumors and these like Jewish news agencies that were reporting on this stuff. I mean, it was all just, it's like one like long running narrative, like atrocity propaganda narrative that was just institutionalized and codified in the history books after World War II. That's it.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that number appears quite a number of times pre-World War II, pre-National Socialist Germany. That number is everywhere. It kind of seems like they're following one of those little, I don't know if you know how much Jews follow numerology and practice numerology. It's like sickening how often
Yeah,
they.
there's definitely something to that. I mean, I don't know, all the details, but there's all sorts of different theories and people kind of go down rabbit holes with it, but there does seem to be something to that for sure. Like the whole 6 million number and yeah.
There absolutely is. They did it with 9/11. They do it with a lot of different things. But they like to put some kind of a mystical passion behind everything they do, and numerology is a massive part of that. I mean, you can't even just go on Google and look up like the new just look up a phrase like numerical value of each letter in the alphabet and go on Google Images. It's all Hebrew. That's a this numerology thing is a massively Jewish inception. It always has been.
Yeah, no, I think you're definitely right. Well, I'll tell you what, man. I don't know if you had any other kind of like concluding remarks. I wanted to kind of keep this to about an hour. We're a little bit over that. But your work is great. I mean, I got much more to dig into here just on your Odyssey channel. I know you do like live streams, like you do these Omegle streams as well. Is that something you do pretty regularly? And is that also where like you talk to like random people? Is that kind of the whole thing?
Yeah, so Omegle's it's just like you match with strangers and you get to talk to them. And this is a category that's very popular for our people, content-wise. A lot of guys do this where they go on and Gypsy Crusader is pretty well known for that. Handsome Truth does this and many,
Yeah,
many other people.
I've seen a lot of them actually. Brandon Martinez was doing it for a while, I remember. I think he probably
Yep.
still does.
I think he
Yeah,
does too.
it's pretty interesting. Yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff.
And one thing about it that I've always noticed is everybody that does this, it's always like shock value entertainment kind of a path. And again, kind of my thought process with the lecturing videos, and it's the same with Omegle. I try to go for a little more of a professional approach. And a lot of these guys will come in, they'll sit with somebody for like 10 minutes and just like fuck around and tell them like Jews suck and stuff. And I go on and I'll sit with people for, dude, I've had like hour and a half long conversations with people where I slowly am providing them with all these different information and trying to open up their eyes, because the way I see it is these people are exactly where I was 3 years ago, man. They just don't know. And maybe if they knew, their worldview would be a little bit different. And it's our duty to try to get them to know.
Yeah, I think that's a very like respectable approach to it, you know? I mean, I don't think like like berating and like being rude to other people about this sort of thing is very effective. I mean, you want to be able to have a conversation and so and like your approach is like totally the approach that I would have taken. I've never done like an Omegle thing or whatever, but
Yeah.
that's exactly how I try to talk to this sort of stuff with people like in real life. And
Right.
yeah, I mean, and I think like just your approach overall, like with the 9/11 issue, for example, and with the whole Holocaust analysis. I mean, these are like some of the most like controversial taboo topics, and you got to be very careful with how you go about it. Otherwise, you're just gonna like instantly like alienate somebody or just turn them off, or like,
Yeah.
they'll have like the sort of knee-jerk reaction that we've kind of discussed. So you got to be careful, and I think your approach is absolutely effective and admirable. I mean, this is exactly, the way that I think anyways we should be going about this. At least that's the way I would go about it, certainly. I guess everybody has their own strategy, and sometimes it's funny or whatever, and clips go viral and that sort of thing, and maybe it'll wake up people, but I don't know. I think just trying to reach people where they're at and make some like basic points that they could relate to, and not be like bombarded with, oh, you believe like just blind Jewish propaganda, like kind of berating them. I don't think that that's very effective.
Right. Now, don't get me wrong. I think entertainment is a big thing, and it is helpful. Most of our people, sadly, their main focus in life is entertainment. So, you know, it is certainly helpful to an extent, but we have to be careful. You know, we don't want to repel people away. And this is, again, such a hard topic. These people have been taught and trained that if you think the way you and I think, it's all automatically from a place of hate. So when you kind of fill those shoes and tell these people, oh, I'm hateful, you know, fuck the Jews or something stupid like that, or, you know, I hate these kikes, or you say things like this, you're playing into that narrative that's already been pre-created about you. And I don't see how that helps our cause at all. I just don't.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I completely agree. Well, I'll tell you what, man, you're doing great work, and this was a great conversation. I'm really glad that we finally connected, and I'd love to do this again in the future. Your work is outstanding over on Odyssey. And so you have an Odyssey channel, and then also do you also upload everything on Goyim TV as well?
Yes, I use Odyssey and Goyim TV, and I also have a BitChute channel. My name is the same on all of them, just Logos Revealed. I don't use the BitChute as much or promote it, but I do recommend if people like the interview style videos, I put all those on BitChute, and that's the only platform where I actually edit them down. So.
Oh, okay. So like the Odyssey stuff is like just the raw, unfiltered, like uncut.
Yeah. And okay. Then on BitChute, like I cut off the intro and I cut off like the end where I have like a little monologue with my chat room or something like that. You get like just literally just the interview when you go on BitChute.
Okay. All right. That's cool. That's good to know. Well, I'll tell you what, send me a link to your BitChute channel and also your Goyim TV channel. I was trying to find the Goyim TV profile and I couldn't find it right off the bat. So if you could do that, I'll definitely include it when I post this podcast for people to check out.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'll send those over on Skype.
Okay.
You said BitChute and Odyssey?
Yeah, send me those. Well, I have Odyssey. If you could send me the BitChute and the Goyim TV link, I'll put that in the like, you know, when I post the podcast so people can just click it and go right there.
Okay, perfect, brother.
Cool. Zach, thanks, man. It's good to connect, like I said. And yeah, let's stay in touch and do this again. Keep up the great work, man.
Of course. And thank you again for having me on, John. And if you ever want to come on my show or you want to have me on again, you let me know, okay?
For sure. Yeah, let's do that.
All righty. Thank you, brother.
Okay. Take care, man.
You too.
Bye.